Man, I would honestly just say, like, just compete with the person in the mirror. So, like, anytime, you feel like you're not where you're supposed to be, or someone is where you want to be, just know that, like, you're where you're supposed to be right now.
Coming in at 6'5", 240, or 235. We still couldn't figure that out. Jawan Breskison-Jones, how are you doing today, sir? Welcome to TSP.
I'm good. I'm good. You didn't have to put my weight out there like that. I'm leaner now, so I'm about 228.
Oh, wow. Good for you.
Yeah, I got that coaching. I'm in coaching shape right now.
There you go. Oh,
So,
that is a real thing for sure.
oh, trust me, I found out quick.
But I was trying to do that like John Wall coming in at 6'4", but you're taller than that. But
Yeah, I got you.
so Jawan, 7-year CFL vet, wide receiver. You've seen him on ESPN before on You Got Mossed. Now a retired CFL receiver, an entrepreneur, almost. I guess we'll get there maybe.
Hasn't been publicly discussed until probably today. So,
Are we allowed to?
I think it's like one of those things where it's like we'll see what
Gotcha.
happens, but that's where I'm leaning towards.
Potentially
Yeah.
retired. But besides that, entrepreneur, coach, podcast host, crypto investor. And long story short, kind of how we met, an old coworker of mine at TC Boost, Michael Drock, used to train Juwan. And Juwan just liked that style of training. And when Mike Drock moved away, I was still there. He connected us, and the rest is history. So I'm glad that I was able to be a part of maybe the last ride. I enjoyed working together, just kind of watching you do your thing, how you do your work. Focused 95% of the time, unless there's a basketball and hoop around, but that's a different story. But take us through kind of the main stops along the way from like NIU to now, and then we will get into it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll even take you a little bit before that. So, growing up in Mississauga, Ontario, I was a basketball player. And I'm gonna give you like the SparkNotes version. Played AAU basketball, traveled around the US with my AAU basketball team, dominating. And ended up in Culver, Indiana, at a military academy called Culver Military Academy, where I went on a basketball scholarship and an academic scholarship. Prior to that, I started playing football when I was 9, and played quarterback. The coach was like, if you play multiple sports, you get more money. So I was like, okay, cool. I didn't come for money. Tuition was expensive. So I was like, all right, I'll do basketball, I'll do football, I'll do track, right? So I was busy, and started playing receiver my junior year of high school. Had no clue what I was doing, but I knew how to, catch the ball. Just, I was a jump ball guy and
Athlete.
athlete, exactly. And yeah, my senior year had a really great year, football wise. I think I still hold 3 school records. And we went to state for basketball. I went to state for track. Ended up getting a football scholarship to Northern. They actually offered me a basketball and a football scholarship,
Wow.
but I was thinking about my knees at the time for some reason. I was like, yeah, I want to be able to walk when I'm 40. And
And then
looking
your brain
back,
was just fine during football, right?
Looking back, I probably could have done both, and honestly, it might have saved my body a little bit going to basketball season, because football was a grind in college. But yeah, had a decent career at NIU, got drafted to the Calgary Stampeders, which is in Calgary, Alberta. Went to 3 Grey Cups with them, won one, ended up in Toronto for 2 years, won a Grey Cup there. And then was in Saskatchewan last year, didn't even make the playoffs. So that was a new experience for me. I've
Jeez.
never experienced that before. And now I'm here in Chicago.
Sweet. Yeah, it was my freshman year. We went to the D2 World Series. We won like 35 games, and then we won 30 games, and then 20, and then 12. So
Yeah.
yeah, it started hot, and it all went down from there. So I feel that for sure. But yeah, so super excited kind of just to talk through some of your biggest stories along the way. Is not too many people get to play not only in the CFL, but also for that long. But kind of everything else that you have outside of football, I think is pretty interesting as well. But we'll start with the best story, the classic, the staple. What is the coolest, craziest, wildest story? Like, just looking back, you couldn't even make it up if you tried.
Man. Oh, that's a good question. I feel like that, like, just playing Division One sports, playing in college, you have so many stories, things that you probably can't, you know, share. You know, I would say, I'll give you like a pivotal story in my life. Sweet. All right. So a pivotal story. My freshman year, I get to Northern Illinois. Like I said, basketball player turned receiver, didn't really get that much coaching in high school. And I get to college, you know, you leave high school and everybody thinks they're the man, right? Everybody's like, oh, I'm the man, you know, I'm gonna, you know, go to the NFL, do this, do that. I was kind of the opposite. I was like, I think I'm just gonna, you know, play football, get my school paid for, and, you know, call it a day.
Wow.
Right? I had no intentions of playing pro football, because I was a basketball guy. And the thing that made that even more evident was going to NIU and showing up to freshman like workouts and seeing these guys that were like jacked, and they were like, you know, they looked like grown men.
Wild.
I was a little skinny kid. Like, I was, it might sound like I was big. I was 210 pounds coming out of high school, but I was skinny. I never touched a weight, right? I didn't know anything. And so I get there and I'm around these guys from Texas, Florida, California.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very humbling. So I go into my first camp and a bunch of the seniors got hurt. So I'm a freshman, like I said, don't know anything, don't even know what a release is off the line. Going against this guy named Rashawn Melvin that ended up playing about 8 to 10 years in the NFL. He was like a 6'3 cornerback, long arms.
Jeez.
Going against him, I try to get off the line. He jams me out of bounds into the defense, like just like bullies me out of bounds. And I was so embarrassed that I was like, I think I'm just going to transfer. I'm going to go play JUCO basketball.
Just that one play.
After that one play, I was so defeated. And but then, you know, long story short, I ended up getting with one of the senior receivers, and he kind of basically turned me into who I am today. And he played a big part of that. His name's Perez Ashford. He was a solid mentor and like great receiver. But, you know, that's something that sticks out of my mind as far as like a story of like kind of, I guess, like, you know, just the difference between high school and college. And then there's an even bigger jump from college to pros.
Mm.
So might not be
first?
Crazy, but yeah.
It was cool enough. It's how you chose to answer that question. But I guess we'll kind of get into the CFL. What was that first week, month like?
Even that's another just kind of the biggest thing that I noticed was the speed at which guys were playing at. Because, you know, when I was playing football, it was 11-man football. And then you go to the CFL, it's 12.
Mm. And there's right? Like three so downs.
Three downs. And the speed is crazy.
Kick onside. You can kick it to yourself, right?
There's something like that, but like that might take a little bit. There's the
goalpost is like in the end zone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Bigger field. End zones are like 30 yards.
Jeez.
Basically like playing on a soccer field width-wise. And, you know, there's 30 yards of the end zone. But coming out of NIU, I was feeling myself a little bit. I'm like, you know, I'm a Canadian kid, but I played it down south. So I'm like, well, I'm about to go to Canada.
Down south. Illinois is down south.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I was like, I'm gonna, you know, come in, I'm gonna, you know, go crazy and get out. I'm gonna go to the NFL. That was my goal. And
When did that switch for you from, oh, I'm just here to like get paid versus like, oh man, I could like when was it breakout season? Was it like sophomore year? Like when was that moment where you're like, uh-oh, this is like possible?
That's actually a good question. I want to say Jordan Lynch's senior year. So my senior year, I just had like games where I went for like 100 yards and like just had big games, making one hand catches. And I was like, I'm doing stuff that I was doing in high school in college. So I was like, damn, maybe I can do this in the pros. Little did I know there was levels, right? We started playing against like teams like Ohio State. We started playing as teams like Arkansas, Iowa. We played Florida State in the Orange Bowl, and I was like, wow. Like, these guys are – I can see why these guys were four-star, five-star athletes.
Yeah.
Or I was a zero-star athlete, maybe a negative-star athlete. You know what I mean? Athletic, but just didn't have the, you know, hype and coaching. But I would say around then, that's when it changed. And then I kind of went through – yeah, I kind of went through, you know, different things mental health-wise, which kind of leads me to – you know, where I'm at right now, that made me not want to play football. And so I kind of went back to, you know, I'll just stop playing and, you know, go on with my life. And then kind of just had this itch to like, just bet it all on myself for pro day. And I ended up getting drafted. But yeah, once I got to Calgary, like I said, I thought I was going to kill it. I had a solid career. But just the speed when I came in, like we had the waggle, which is like a little, it's like an 8 yard start when you hit the line of scrimmage. I had to get used to that. I didn't even play in the slot in college, and all of a sudden I'm in the slot and I have to work a waggle. And little did I know, there's guys on my team that went to Texas Tech. They went to Texas. They went to Baylor, Alabama, LSU. I played with guys from every conference in college football, but now we're in the CFL. So when I got there, the speed was crazy because one, I didn't know what I was doing, and two, the athletes were great.
It's quite the combo.
Yeah. So I would say like that was the biggest eye opener for me, like going from college to the pros.
What's one thing like actually being in it that a regular person like myself might be surprised? Whether it's like not as glamorous or this totally meets the hype or something that like someone might assume or might not assume about playing in the CFL that being in it is like the exact opposite.
Well, I mean, like I said before, the speed and like the amount of like how athletic players are. There's some freak athletes in the CFL, and we've heard, you might have heard Chad Johnson, Chad Ochocinco talk about the CFL a little bit. Like when he first got to the CFL, he had the same mindset. Like he's coming from the NFL. He's one of the best receivers, best route runners to play pro football, period. And he even thought that he would come to the CFL and kill. And he said like he quickly got humbled. Because like there's a small amount of players that can make an NFL roster, right? And a lot of the times, the players that are in the league for years, they stick, whether they should be in the league or not. And it is what it is. But a lot of CFL players have different knocks against them. They're too small. They're not fast enough. They didn't small have college. The college stats. Yeah. You know, there's so many different things, right? And in football, there's more leagues coming out now to where guys can have a chance to keep playing. But the CFL was that league for guys to keep playing for the most part. But other than that, I would say in the NFL and the CFL, the time it takes to process things in a matter of seconds to go out and then, you know, adjust on the fly, apply, you know, what you worked on during the week for practice, you know, being able to execute the game plan, everybody being on the same page, like processing that stuff in the CFL is 20 seconds. 20-second play clock, right? Three Jeez. Downs. Yeah, Jeez. So we're going fast.
Yeah.
The NFL is 40-second play clock, but apparently the time it takes to spot the ball, all that stuff, it's around 20, 25 seconds, so very similar. But the CFL is like, it feels like NASCAR when you first get there. Your cardio has to be different. So I would say, like, just the mental side, like, being cerebral enough to, like, go out there. Mm. Like, I'll take you through a process, right? We go in the huddle, quarterback calls a play. All right, boom. I got to know where I have to line up. I got to know what I have on that route. Then, depending on what the defense does, I have to adjust my route. And the quarterback also has to know the route that I'm adjusting to.
So you call the audible?
No. So like, say like, I'll give you an example. If I'm in the slot and I have like a go ball, right? But somebody blitzes, I might have to run a slant. So like a 5 yard in, right? And the quarterback has to know that. I have to know that. So one of the most beautiful things about football is, like, whether it's 11-man or 12-man football, everybody has to be on the same page. Because if one person messes up, you completely mess up the whole play.
Yeah.
Right? So just stuff like that that people might not know.
Interesting. I know we've chatted in the past. I guess we'll kind of talk about this, where you could, like, mix and match, or, like, you could drop a top CFL guy, like, in the NFL, and if you didn't know he was a CFL guy, like, so a lot of the guys could make it, just whether it was, you know, like, game film at NIU doesn't look as good as game film at Alabama. Like, do you take a backup Alabama guy, or do you take a star from the MAC, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, what was it like as you kind of talked about, like, not necessarily like, oh, I'm deserved a chance, but, like, just wrestling with that where I'm better than those guys, or it's just this is this. Like, how is kind of handling that as a player?
I think that was tough. I think it was something that I had to get over, and it took me a while. Honestly, I probably just started getting over it, just because, like,
7 years is the charm.
6-7 years, maybe still have it in the back of my mind. But I think sometimes, because as an athlete, you're consistently being compared to other athletes, other people, you kind of live your life comparing yourself to, like, other athletes and other people. Like, that's the best way I can say it. So it's like, it's almost like an ego thing. So it's like, I'll see somebody do something, be like, oh, I could do that. Not like, that guy is a great athlete, or that girl's a great athlete. You know what I mean? Or, like,
yeah,
a guy makes a catch, oh, I've done that before. Or yeah, I should be, a guy drops a ball on Sunday, I'm at home on my couch watching.
Oh,
I'm like,
I could do
oh,
that.
I would have made that play. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's just a constant being compared to other people throughout your life that, like, pushes you to be great, but at the same time, it kind of, like, it can affect you mentally, because you're consistently going to be comparing yourself to people. So, like, if you're not where they are, or if you're not where you think you should be, it could possibly weigh on you mentally.
What would you say to an athlete who's kind of working through that right now? Some quick, simple advice.
Man, I would honestly just say, like, you know, just compete with the person in the mirror. So, like, you know, anytime, you know, you feel like you're not where you're supposed to be, or someone is where you want to be, you know, just know that, like, you're where you're supposed to be right now. And, like, you have control over kind of your situation and the work you put in to get to where you want to be. And whether you get to that goal or not, there's going to be something along the way that you can apply that work ethic to that will, you know, allow you to be successful, or there'll be some sort of learning experience. That's what I've noticed throughout my career the most.
Yeah. Just focusing on you. And on the flip side, the solo podcast I just dropped before this, it was the four biggest lessons from 4 years of coaching. And the first lesson was imposter syndrome is real, which is probably the opposite of I deserve a shot in the NFL, you know, but the silver lining is, I had, like, a silver lining of each lesson was, if you know that you're doing everything that you can, then you're not an imposter, right?
Yeah.
When there's that gap between, like, oh, I deserve a shot in the NFL, and then you're not getting your prehab, post-hab, stuff like that in. When you're not, like, getting with, like, guys like me in the off season, right? When you could have been getting after it for 4 months and it turns into, like, 2.5, then that's where that imposter syndrome, or you truly don't deserve it. So I think, yeah, as long as, like, you know, you're doing what you can, I think that that's probably the only thing you can do. But
yeah,
super,
I agree.
Relatable for sure. So next, have to talk about what it's like winning a Grey Cup. You know, we see all of those parades, you know, Travis Kelce living his best life and stuff like that. But what's it like actually reaching the pinnacle of your league?
It's very similar, but on a smaller scale, obviously, because that's the Super Bowl. But, like, the Grey Cup, like you said, it's the pinnacle, right? Like, and it's not only the pinnacle for the team, but it's the pinnacle for each individual player, because everybody has their story leading up to that point, right? Whether you were hurt whether you were a practice roster player, whether you were a starter, whether you were a star player. Like for me, we lost two Grey Cups in a row before we got to the third one and won it. And I just always wanted to contribute to a Grey Cup. And that year I played 18 games. I had some big games. I had you know, a big catch in the Grey Cup for like a first down. It was only 5 yards, but it was still like a drive to like continue on. And I think we eventually scored, or we got out of a bad field position or something like that. But the cool thing for me in the moment that I'll never forget was I had everybody that I loved at that game. Except for like my grandparents. My mom was there, my stepmom, my aunt, my dad, my little sister, my fiance was there. And it was just kind of like a moment where it was like, man, like everything came together. It was in Edmonton, which is where my pops is from, which allowed him to be there. He literally lives down the street from the stadium. So it was just kind of cool how everything played out. We lost the one at home my rookie year in Toronto. We lost the next year in Ottawa. And then, you know, kind of we go to Edmonton where my dad lives and we win. It was crazy. Yeah.
How about like that night? The next few days, how long does it kind of the buzz stick around? And then like, when does it hit you of like, well, now no one cares anymore. Like, it's not as like you think it would last longer than it does. Or like when we won the World Series, or we went to the World Series, right? Yeah. We went from like my head coach had one season above 500 in 12 years to going to the D2 World Series. And I'm like walking around campus like that fall. I'm like, oh, wait, no one gives a crap about this.
Yeah.
Oh, this is awkward, you know?
Yeah. Well, I know some guys partied for like a week, 2 weeks. So they probably, you know, they went hard. I think the city cared for about a week. I will say that. Because other than us, there's the Flames, the Calgary Flames, and they hadn't won anything in a while. So we were kind of like the big men in the city, surprisingly enough. But personally, I think I got over it within like a month. I did have like a really cool celebration party back home. It was like a big surprise party. Rented out a restaurant, and I had like probably like 200 people there, family and friends, and didn't know what was going on. So that was pretty cool. But after that, maybe like after a month after, it was kind of like, okay, now it's time to get back to work.
Heck yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
So next, the biggest kind of full circle moment, and this can be something that has already come full circle, or maybe it's something in your career that you're kind of waiting to see how it pans out, or like that reason. So basically something that takes some time and some reflection to kind of figure it out. What's one of the biggest things you have so far?
Yeah, man. I'll say the biggest full circle moment was just going through everything that I went through mentally, starting my, you know, junior, senior year of college, being off and on, dealing with anxiety, dealing with depression, and not even really knowing what I was going through, just because, like, it was never anything that I talked about, anything that, like, my parents talked about. I had no clue. And, you know, going into, we had a canceled season in 2020 during the pandemic in the CFL. I had no clue what I was going to do with my life. Because football was only my main source of income. So full circle, like going through that, going through anxiety and depression in college and during the pandemic, and kind of like going in and out of it for like the next 2-3 years. Finally decided to do something about it and go back to school, to graduate school for my master's, which I'm currently in right now in counseling psychology, to become a sports psychologist, to work with athletes on the mental side of things. And, you know, not only have the credentials to do it, but also the experience to relate and for them to understand that I know what it's like, you know, dealing with expectations and dealing with mental health and having to go out and perform. Like, I'm depressed and anxious, and I'm going out and trying to avoid getting my head knocked off. Like, that's not easy. So Yeah, full circle moment, definitely. Just kind of knowing what I want to do post football.
How long did it take you when you first thought about going back to enrolling in your first class?
I would say 2.5 years.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah, so I think if someone's on the fence, like, it's not like you have that moment, and there's a lot that goes into a decision like that. So shout out to you for making that happen. But I think there's so much to be said about actually playing, and not every coach, like I'm a strength coach, you're now a speed coach and a receiver coach,
mm-hmm.
like can play or has the opportunity to play. But like, we've all had those sports psych meetings where it's someone from like the front office in like a suit that's just like spewing all these like cliche things, and then you're just in the back kind of just rolling your eyes, right?
Yeah.
But like, I think just a chance to be like share a story, you know, where it's like very similar and this is how I overcame it, like, and even just, you know, right, wrong, or the other, when it says, you know, I played college baseball on the TC Boost website, like little Johnny's mom and dad are like, oh, it's got to be him. It's like, yeah, well, Steve and Tommy are way better than I am, you know, like,
yeah.
So it doesn't make you good, but it makes you relatable, which then gives you the opportunity to be good.
Yeah.
For sure, if that makes sense.
I agree.
So last, we'll talk about kind of life after football, as I feel like that constituted most of our conversations when we were kind of working together. So take me through some of your little side hustles. You got the pod, you got some properties. Crypto was an interesting topic, Android, chatting about with you.
Yeah.
So just talk about kind of like life after football. That'll be our last big topic.
So the big thing that I'm focusing on right now is obviously finishing school. I have this vision of like kind of making a niche for myself in the mental health side of things for sports psychology. And I just want to make it cool. I'm not going to share too much, but you know, I have some ideas for sure. Cause I'm 30, going to be 31 next month, January 10th.
Jeez. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
So, you know, still young, obviously, and still relatable. So it's like, I feel like when people think of mental health, they think of like, they have like this certain kind of idea. It's a serious topic, but I don't think it always has to be a serious conversation. You know what I mean? So I think that I want to try to figure out a way to like kind of make it cool. So it's like more people will talk about it, be open to talking about it, be a little bit more of a comfortable conversation to have.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. I'm always into real estate. That's a big thing for me. You know, I dabble in crypto. I'm not like an expert or anything. I have like a little bag of Bitcoin. It's doing decent right now. That doesn't mean you go out and buy it, because you heard me talk about it. Definitely don't take financial
advice. Dogecoin to the moon.
Yeah, I don't know anything. What else?
The Athlete Show.
Yeah, my podcast. We're kind of like on a little lull right now, just because we're in the off season. Guys are figuring out their lives, which is cool. Like, you know, it's okay to take a break and come back, but I think we'll be back soon for season two, revamp some stuff, and then, you know, just trying to build like more of a coaching presence on Instagram, sharing clips of other receivers in game doing stuff or drills that I might be doing. I have a huge problem with like guys who have knowledge gatekeeping knowledge. I feel like you're doing a disservice to athletes and coaches out there that might not know as much as you. And a lot of people see other guys as competition. It's just like, there's so many people in the world. Like, you, the people who like your content, the people who like you are going to, you know, they're going to interact with you. They're going to buy your stuff. So I don't feel the need to, you know, keep information from people. So I just try and share as much as I can on Instagram. Well, that's the plan, is to share as much as I can.
Yeah, Steve had a good quote where it's like, almost how egotistical is it of you to assume that you have this one secret that no one else is doing and no one ever has done, where it's like, I think I have a unique training spin, like speed, be athletic, like specific, but not like,
yeah,
but it's not like I'm the first person to kind of ever do that, right? And then just the overwhelmingly positive like feedback from the players and also the coaches that like repost all of my stuff, you know? And it's like, first off, probably when it's getting posted, like I'm already like messing around with the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also it's like, I was thinking about this. If you gave, you know, we always talk about like what makes a good coach, right? It's not about the program. It's about all of this stuff. And then everyone like keeps the program a secret, right?
Yeah.
Like if I gave my program to, or like, for example, as we're like trying to figure out our interns here at Northwestern, and we gave them each the piece of paper, like who's going to be the most successful coach, the one that can like make it happen, you know, get the buy-in, get the team with intent and like all that stuff, where it's like, you can give my same program to another coach, it's not going to be the same, you know? Yeah. So it's a weird line of like, oh, this is so secret. And like, yes, it might be unique. It's your spin.
Yeah,
for sure. But it's not like it's probably never been done before, you know?
It had to come from somewhere. Like you had to have gotten it from somewhere, or yeah, like been influenced by something.
So I think the overwhelmingly positives that come from social media, I think outweigh the very small chance. And also, and I'd be interested to hear your two cents on it. Like what, like at the end of the day, you have to be really good at your sport.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, like I've had, you know, like relatively better programs for swim and baseball. Their strength coaches follow me. But at the end of the day, like they just have better baseball players.
You know? Oh, yeah. That's definitely a thing. So I mean, like
yeah.
Like, have you ever put a kid through a drill and it's like it didn't look that good, but then you get a pro athlete, you get like a D1 athlete and you put them through that same drill. You're like, okay, that looks way better. Like, I've had that experience where I'm like, oh man, like, am I coaching this wrong? Like,
this is a bad drill. Yeah.
Yeah. Is this a bad drill? And then I'm like, maybe that kid just isn't ready for that drill. Or, and then I go and do it with, get another kid or another player to do the drill. It's like, okay, that's how it's supposed to look. Right. So it's stuff like that. A lot of guys, they get like high D1 athletes or pro guys and they look like gurus. But then it's like they don't want to work with a youth kid, or they don't want to work with maybe a high school kid that's not as developed. Me, I don't care whether you're a Hall of Fame receiver or you're a high school kid that can't even walk and chew gum. I'll still work with you because I like a challenge. You know what yeah. I mean?
And it's valuable, and it's a different challenge. Like working with someone like yourself, to like not break you and get you feeling really good. And then on the flip side, like, can you get little Johnny that can't run a fly 10 without falling over to like looking good? Those are yeah. each challenges in and of themselves. But yeah, it's like all of the national championship programs every year, like people try to find a drill that they were doing or whatever it may be. And it's like how our roster is constructed and the facilities that we have and the constraints that we have, like, dictate so much of that, where it's like, you literally cannot copy paste if you wanted, you know? I guess exercises here and there are a little bit different, but like, yeah, I think like, oh, it's a secret, or I don't want anyone to share. It's like, gotta call you out on that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, not to knock trainers or anybody like that, but like, how many times have you seen guys that they might be doing questionable workouts that may not necessarily apply to a sport, but they have like a top NBA player, a top NFL player, a top baseball player doing it. So that adds credibility to the trainer just because of who they're training.
Like I've seen that so many times. Does the athlete make the coach?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both.
Yeah, it's a combo for sure. And there is value in like not breaking someone. You know, like Aaron Matz in the field hockey head coach, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Like her job was not to like make them way better. Her job was just not to make them worse.
Yeah.
Like they won it two out of the last 3 years. She knew the system. She played there. Like her job was just to not get in the way, which is hard for sure. Like I'm not saying that it's not, but like it'd be more impressive to go from like a 500 team to a playoff team, or 500 team to a championship team, you know? Or like those are two different challenges. So like we had Stu McMillan, one of the top like sprint coaches right now, continuing at Zoom in with us at TC Boost like 2-3 years ago. And our population at TC Boost is like 12 to 18 mostly. Some mm-hmm. younger, some older, right?
Yep.
And we asked him, it's like, oh, cool, like great concept. Like, what would you do if you did this with like a 12-year-old? And this guy and Stu goes, oh, well, I'd probably ask you guys about that. Like, that's not my wheelhouse. Like, this guy works with Olympians, you know?
Yeah.
So I think just to be able to take a step back, and I've made podcasts about this, but like being a better consumer of social media, who are they working with? Right. Like all, there's so many things that go into it, but I think to get someone to like watch your stuff and be like, oh, okay. Like I get that concept, or like, oh, I'll mess around with this in my next workout. Like,
yeah.
Then you're providing value, and then they'll be able to make their own spin on it. And then, yeah.
I think it, and not to like get hung up on the topic too much, but I think it goes back to that whole idea of like ego that I was talking about earlier, as far as like, you said a lot of the times it's not like, like just don't break the athlete, don't hurt the athlete. And I think a lot of coaches want to have that credit that I made this athlete who they are, that they're like, it kind of gets in the way of like what their job truly is to do, which is to, you know, help the athlete at the end of the day.
And we will end that rant. So super cool. Appreciate you taking the time. I'm excited to follow along. Kind of what is next this year, what's next in a few years, I guess TBD. But we are speaking into existence. So I'd like to say thank you, officially roll out the red carpet for you, sort of plug whatever you got to plug. Where can they get more of Juwan Breskison? Not Briskaskin, Breskison.
Yeah, Breskison.
Yeah.
I mean, my favorite platform to be on is probably Twitter or Instagram. I would say Instagram the most. So my Instagram, and I'm supposed to keep branding consistent, but it's J Breskison Jones 82 on Instagram, and then on Twitter is J Breskison 11. So you kind of get, yeah, you get different sides of me. Actually, no, it's the Scats Juwan.
That's funny.
On Twitter, but yeah, just search Juwan Breskison and you'll find me.
For sure. Yeah, it's super easy for me. Just Instagram/Twitter, Coach Big Toe. Keep it the same.
Yeah, I know. I got to fix that. I'm verified, so it's like I can't change my name.
Can't miss it.
Yeah, it comes with its perks and its downsides.
All right, Juwan. Super, super grateful for your time. Looking forward to following along, and we will talk soon.
Thanks, man. It's been a pleasure.